We'll call me to order, please.
The only measure I have.
Already we have CS for Hop Hill, 883, requested Mr. Davis. And perhaps you could tell us what you have, Mark.
Yep. Okay, Mr. Chairman, the idea behind this bill here was try to establish a cottage home in rural areas where we have many old people now. The only place they can go is the Pioneer Homes, Fairbanks, Anchorage, or Sitka. And most of the old people don't like to leave the area at all, and I don't pay for them already. But what I hoped I could do here was to somehow get our native corporation, the village corporation, or anybody else, you know, to go ahead and put these homes in the rural areas and then lease them out to the state. And this way, they wouldn't be so darn, they wouldn't have the restrictions that your Pioneer Homes have. And I know there's rules and regulations that's awfully restricted, you know, but with this type, I hope that this type of cottage homes would take care of the oldsters before they have to, you know, before they're really bedridden, have some place to stay. But then if they get sick, then they would naturally go to a hospital, go to a Pioneer Home where they could have nursing care. But this would be before that happened, so that they could, you know, enjoy their life right at home there until they really have to go.
What kind of, in general, what kind of buildings are you speaking about? I mean, when you talk about a cottage home or a group home, how do you picture that? A big place or a duplex?
Well, I was thinking about fourplex, eightplex, or whatever, you know. What I hope to do is that we could maybe go with three demonstration projects and have a cottage home for six, have one for 12, and have one for 20. See how, you know, see what the cost is going to be. We'll have a fiscal later on. But if we could do that, you know, we'd have the other program with that the state agency has now, you know, maintain and operate these homes. So that the cost, you know, the at least the original cost would be so great the state and the corporation would put the initial investment in going. Over the period of years to get their money back, but once they get the money back, then there would be no more lease, you know, payments made to the state. Now, in other words, it would be the way for the state to come into our areas and help the old people out of there.
Yeah. Well, do you know of any corporation? Which corporation is up in
Northwest? Bering Straits.
Or are they presently planning to?
Well, we've had this in the plan for a couple of years now, but there's no way that we can get the state to come in unless we can get something that they could lease from us, you know, and maintain and operate. Our corporations, both our regional corporation and our village corporation right now, is willing to go ahead and put up these homes, you know, for the benefit of the stockholders. But I think it's discriminatory to do that to have them take care of their senior citizens, you know, when the state is providing care all over the state here, you know, at no cost to them. Cost to the local people, except, you know, paying taxes.
Mr. Hagney?
Well, Mr. Chairman, the thought crosses my mind that really, how would this differ from a Pioneer home? In other words, how could you build a structure, keeping in mind the cost of the one that was built in Colorado and the very small number of people that it was designed for? How could you have something that might be different from that and figure on building it so much cheaper?
Well, your Pioneer Homes has got regulations that are pretty restrictive, and they, you know, they have to be met, you know. But under this type of home, I hope that we can go ahead and build these things with the minimum amount of restrictions or regulation that you have to follow, you know. That the village age, you know, and once they're built up and once they're operating, the village age we have in the village now, could take care of these people, because these people can still get around. They're not bedridden or anything. They can still get around, but they need a place to stay.
But then how do you take care of maintenance and operation?
Well,
the state do that?
The state hopefully will be able to do this. because once we get the building up, if you're looking to build here somewhere, I'd ask for maintenance and operational from the street, for the street to.
This, Mr. Chairman, I have, but I have two, I have a different bill from Lisa. This one says establishment of cottage homes.
Yeah, we substitute for the 180.
Which is the most recent?
That's yours. I just, I've got to go. Thank you.
In that matter of contract for maintenance, is that what you were looking at, Glenn? There's an authorization to contract for maintenance.
Well, yeah, what I'm really wondering is, how do we figure that maintenance could be so much less on something like this than it would be on a Pioneer home? You're going to have to build them really well. They won't be just for a single party. They'll be for the same type of use as a Pioneer home.
Well, this is the reason I tried to go into this concept, Glenn, is I realized that the cost of maintaining a Pioneer home is really way to heck too damn much. And the state is not getting its benefits because unless they pay maybe $2,000 per month per person, or heck, you might just as well give the guy $10,000 and have him build a nice home, then get away from the maintenance cost. Under this program, we would cut down that maintenance cost because of the cost we have to pay for Pioneer homes too darn much.
Wasn't that the situation, Larry, in Cottsview when the Pioneer home was built there and the state estimated it was going to cost, I think it was over $1 million a year to run it, and then they contracted it to Manelik, and Manelik is going to run it for under $500,000 a year. Now, where the difference comes in, I don't know, but the press release from the governor's office said that, you know, this was, that Manelik was going to run it up to certain standards and so on, but could run it much more cheaply than the state itself. Manelik is the nonprofit regional corporation in that area. And I don't quite understand myself how they can do it so much cheaper, but for some reason, it is possible.
Yeah, well, with Manelik, they have several other things they do too in the same area. They just put this care package in the same package, and they have personnel hours. Yeah. And that's, you know, once you start talking, when you've got some, when you're doing something, you know, you need to put the people to work, you know, a bit more. And you've got this other thing that you could put in there without having to pump up much money. You know, that's how they're able to, you know. Instead of hiring all new personnel that they have on staff now.
Mr. Chairman, I assume what Larry's talking about is why there is so much thrust for the state contracting for private groups or the private sector to do those, because usually come out ahead, because it isn't, the state is not known for its efficiency. And it works out to the benefit of everybody if they contract these kind of programs out as to try to do it ourselves. I thought that was kind of a given, that usually works out more efficiently and economically. Can't cite specific instances, but that certainly is the feeling I get about what happens when they contract those programs out.
Well, from the examples I gave, it sounds considerable savings could be realized.
It shouldn't be mysterious.
Seems like magic.
Yeah,
I don't really understand.
It's a natural inefficiency of a bureaucracy that you get when the state does it.
I think we have another witness here that wanted to testify.
My name is Debbie Stock, and I'm with Research Services, a legislative affairs agency, and I was assisting Representative Davis in doing some of the background work, as well as the attorney who drafted the bill is here to help you go over line for line if you want on some of the different items so that you can understand exactly what the bill is asking for and what it does. Basically, the need for residential care in Alaska is great. The long-term care study done under the Legislative Council came out with this as one of their major conclusions. There is no facility in the state of Alaska that is 100% residential care, and this differs in terms of the Pioneer's care and nursing home care because it is not at the degree of medical care. As Representative Davis testified, it is prior to the level where someone needs hospitalization or skilled nursing 24 hours a day. It is at the level where someone maybe slightly senile needs someone to care for them and to help them, but it is not at the need where they need hospitalization. This helps the state in terms of it keeps people out of hospitals and nursing homes before they need the care, so the cost is cheaper to the state. It also helps the individual because he's near his community environment and also near a family environment, which is more conducive for a healthful environment. Right now, the average skilled nursing home rate in the state is $2,000 a month. ICF is about half that. So the cost, if there is any way that we can reduce these costs to the state, will be considerable savings. There's about 350 patients right now in Alaskan nursing homes. And right now, the nursing home situation is very tight, as noticed by the Glenmore situation right now. It's happening in Anchorage. So any alternatives that we can offer to the situation will be both cost-saving for the state and will be able to aid the person in the residential care unit. There are two people here from the Department of Community and Regional Affairs who would like to testify on the bill and offer their comments and the fiscal impact.
Who was going to, Harvey and Eric,
Eric Lee, Director of the Division of Community Services in the Department of Community and Regional Affairs. We began to investigate a little bit some of the background figures on this. We were operating somewhat of a vacuum in trying to do this. I think that perhaps we may have as many questions about it still as you perhaps have of us. Our concern is basically the same thing, I think, as everyone else's. We would like to see the cost to the state reduced, and this presents perhaps a viable alternative to more institutionalized care. So as far as the concept is concerned, I think we are basically in favor of the concept of this type of a situation. In trying to develop our figures and so forth in administration of the program, in what it would cost the state, we didn't know whether we were looking at a across-the-board situation with all eligible people or demonstration projects or exactly what we were talking about. And again, we have put together some figures regarding what we felt construction costs might be for these types of places and the cost to amortize those construction costs over a 30-year life and things like this. I don't know whether those would be of interest to you at this point now or not. We also, I think, in the short time frame we had to do this, would like to go back with some of the thoughts that you folks had on today and rework some of these things and maybe narrow it down, as Representative Davis said, perhaps to certain demonstration projects. I think under those circumstances we could pinpoint it pretty close to what it will cost for this type of an operation. We also, of course, have the concern of total escalating costs of the state budget, which perhaps some of these funds could be utilized from our current situation and set aside as a demonstration to, in fact, determine if we can save the state some money if we go this route. Are you interested in some of the figures that we did come up with and some of the statistics? Again, we were making some very general assumptions of doing this, but if you are, I think that Mr. Pitts can perhaps run through those.
Okay, Sam. The figures that we've come up with are based on construction of 4, 6, or 8 plexes. They would hold true for either of those. We worked through Division of Buildings in Asher to come up with the figures that we do have as fast as we could. We were somewhat inhibited yesterday because of the strength of the Division of Buildings. The locations that we picked, which we felt fairly represented the entire state, were Anchorage, Barrow, Bethel, Fairbanks, Juneau, Ketchikan, Kodiak, Kotzebue, and Nome. This is where the bulk of recipients are. Under the old age program, the aid to disability or disabled and the aid to the blind. Now, your first step was to decide what the construction cost would be on a per unit basis. And it just happens that Asher this past year had completed a project somewhat similar to this. And their unit cost for 200 units was about $41,000 per unit.
Where was this done?
In Anchorage. I then went to Division of Buildings and spoke to the only person that I could get hold of yesterday was an architect, Mr. Bob Venusti. And he estimated that if under the bill we would be contracting with private industry to construct these units, the $41,000, even considering inflation, should hold true because there is some savings when construction is done by the private sectors. So that he felt that it would be a valid figure to use during the coming construction season. I then applied a differential cost schedule to come up with the cost in each one of these locations throughout the state. And of course, the differential and the cost run from, based on Anchorage, Juneau, and Ketchikan of 100% to 133.75% in Barrow and Kotzebue. The high construction, of course, would be Barrow and Kotzebue of $54,800 per unit. Bethel would run about $53,300 per unit. 51.
How big is a unit?
One family unit.
Well, I mean, still, that doesn't.
Okay, now based upon these are average figures running from a small, from an efficiency up through three bedrooms. So
I mean,
it's.
How many, what's this footage you're talking about? This thing,
800 feet.
Well, as we say, we're talking about average costs between the one bedroom, two bedroom, three bedroom. We because of the time limitations, and we didn't have time to break those apart any further.
Well, Mr. Chairman, were you taking a 200 unit as your base, for God's sake, and then applying that to a two or a four unit in Barrow and Kotzebue?
Well, these 200 units weren't constructed in one huge, massive building, sir.
No, but they were let under one contract, were they not?
Yes, sir.
Well, I think then you started off with a completely erroneous base figure. You're just way out of the ballpark, I think.
Glenn, I think that we were, as I mentioned, when we first started, we were taking some very gross generalizations to try to come up with some baseline figures to just begin with. And I think that with certain narrow parameters that the committee has in mind, we can come up with probably a little more time. We can come up with probably some better direct costs. But we had 2 days to start from scratch with this, and that is one of our concerns. Is that?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would think that one of the basic figures that you'd want to start with would be the cost that the corporations have already run into in building housing in the very places that we're talking about. And I sure as heck didn't interpret this as applying to the major population centers in the state of Alaska.
We didn't know at the beginning. We had nothing except the bill to work from at the time. And that was what I was saying. I probably have as many questions of the committee that.
I think today we're probably pretty much interested in some ballpark figures and conceptualizing here as to what we have before us.
Again, these are regional costs. Back and work on the, with a little better idea of perhaps specific locations, specific sizes of units, and so forth. I think, again, we'd be more than happy to go back and really try to dig out the specifics of it.
And again, I did check with the only person that I could check with, which is an architect over there. Yes, they were.
Is this a normal procedure for a leasing arrangement before the construction takes place and then to sign a contract that would allow you to recover costs? It's
a common practice for a lease build arrangement, yes. Lease back. That's not an uncommon procedure at all.
Even during construction. The interesting figures that we came up with on the end, though, Sam, was that In those locations that I mentioned, the projected total cost of construction, based on the best figures that we have, is roughly $53 million.
To serve?
To serve the total population in those nine communities.
And how many units was that?
It's a total of 1,134 units that we anticipate on construction. That would serve roughly 50% of all the recipients from the three programs that we discussed, the old age, the blind, and the disabled. We picked 50% simply because we decided that some would be married and some would not choose to live in homes. 50% again is rather arbitrary right now.
Again, that gives us a base figure that we can look at.
And they're very gross figures. We will admit that, believe me.
Mrs. Rose.
Believe me, we will.
Well, those figures based on what? The population of old folks that need places to live?
It's based on October's monthly report from Health and Social Services on payments, assistance payments to the old age, the blind, and the disabled.
I see. May I continue? Larry, I wanted to ask you about the terminology cottage homes. It's very broadly defined, so that it seems to me it could also include things like possibly people getting out of prison or a sort of a halfway house thing. It could include maybe drug rehabilitation programs and so on. Was that your idea that it would be so broadly defined as to enable the state to get involved in that, all of the wide variety of group homes?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't my idea. It was just to go ahead and take care of the old people. And I didn't know how to put the right word in there to be able to identify, you know, a group home.
Well, of course, we can define it any way we want.
It does have an eligibility section in there that provides only people over 65 and other people that are receiving assistance under service.
I see.
Was it basically the blind and the disabled? It says that preference would be given to those
the old, the blind, and the disabled.
I see.
In Palmer, we have a group home such as the dormitory that was used many years ago when the valley was first settled, and the Salvation Army took it over, and they made it into a senior citizen home, and it has been working out quite successfully. The state contracts out, I believe it's 18 beds. They have contracted out. What do they pay for those, huh?
I have no idea.
Mr. Granato, sir.
Excuse me?
What do they pay for those?
In that home in Palmer?
Yeah.
We're not paying now. An arrangement was made in the past that I think was extracurricular, whereby, I wasn't here and I just vaguely understand it, but whereby some of the assistants check the money for the residents. Two of their assistance check went to the home. This was determined to be, as I understand it, irregular and not permissible, and therefore was discontinued. Now that's, I wasn't here, and I have only a vague understanding of it, but that was the problem there. That's why it doesn't.
Well, I mean, what was it they was paying them? Was it $250?
I don't know.
It wasn't, and this was just for a mobile. Individuals, and it was working quite successfully with that. And this was what Representative Davis didn't have in mind, or something like this was for the elderly people and those that are mobile to take care of those. And what it is, it's so many of those that cannot get in the Pioneer's home. Some of them are not eligible for the Pioneer home, and they are in the Salvation Army home.
That's
what it is. Where they do have a doctor comes in on call and comes in about once a week or things like this. So and I was wondering if you've taken any information from that establishment there as to possible costs.
We haven't yet. No, that's a good place to look, I'm sure.
I'm wondering what relationship a program such as this would have to the senior citizens housing grants and loans program that we passed out of this committee about a month ago.
I talked with Ramon Kelly on it. I was going to put an amendment in that bill there to include this year, but then I found out that the regulations that you'd have to go under that concept there would be far more costly than this this idea here. So I decided just to be able to put in a bill of my own. Doesn't try to attach it to the bond issue we passed the other day.
Mr. Lee, you know, this is basically an authorization for the department to go out and do this, do these leasing arrangements. It appears to me that we have to fund it somehow, and it doesn't seem like you probably have too much money just laying around. You could go out and do a program like this.
Obviously not at the present time. We have, of course, no funds for this type of an operation. It's basically a new, another one of the new goodies that seems to be coming our way. I think that if you're talking about a demonstration project, that's one thing. If you're talking about going whole hog and trying to serve everyone that might be eligible, that's an entirely different ballgame, both from the original appropriation from our administrative side of it as well. And that's why we wanted a little finer definition of what was anticipated and what the pleasure of the committee was before we haven't made any attempt to plug in any administrative costs on our part or anything until we had a little better idea of what
right,
the parameters
doesn't seem
were.
Too narrowly defined at the moment here.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
When I drafted this bill here, I was hoping that we could go on a demonstration project in our region there to be able to find out and see what the cost will be, you know, based on a certain location. And my idea was to go for three demonstration projects, one 6 unit in Shishmaref, one 12 unit in Cleef, and one 20 unit in Nome. There. So we have the organization that would be able to provide the personnel for, you know, take care of these senior citizens. And maybe if we did go on a demonstration project, we could probably come up with a pretty good idea of what the cost would be.
I think we can narrow it down very closely in those circumstances.
Well, that'd probably be pretty helpful to us, you know, if we were able to find out what, for instance, on three projects such as that, what I think he has envisioned would be the corporation would put up the initial 200 grand or whatever it would cost, and then, of course, the loan would be amortized, and the department would be expected to pay a certain amount yearly, as well as the contract for maintenance. And, minus whatever.
Plus the collection of rents based upon ability to pay, correct?
Mm-hmm.
That'd be 4,000.
Under the eligibility section there, I think you already mentioned it there. The eligible persons, I haven't had time to look up these, or I didn't do it anyway, look up these different statutory references. When they say they're receiving assistance under these different sections.
That's essentially blind, disabled, and then the elderly. Over 65. So and that way, I believe it simply says that preference will be given in placement in these. I think the intent of that, as I understand it, was that if you had a 20-unit place and you had only 18 eligible people, that you wouldn't leave the other two sit vacant. Necessarily, that you could, in fact, put someone in there to, if all of the people that you have given preference to under these statutes fill that place up, that then you could expand it to put someone. It wouldn't be restricted in placing someone else in there to see that the facility was fully utilized.
Well, the way it's drawn out here is they cite the same six sections in both places. They say if you're over 65 and you're receiving assistance under any one of these six, you're eligible. And then if you're receiving assistance under any one of these six, then you're eligible for a priority status. But the only difference I can see is there's the age. Is it the way you see it?
I think perhaps the language could be, you know, clarified to make it perfectly clear who we're talking about. But I would hate to see it be so restrictive that you would end up with a place sitting with two or three units vacant simply because someone didn't fall into the very restrictive category.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to see some kind of provision in there that would restrict this to the West Road, safe communities with population under 5,000.
Why would you
want to
do that?
Well, that's what I gather we're kind of aiming at here, because the sites that we guys pick are, you know, they're smaller communities within the state of Alaska, and we're doing nothing for them now. We're doing nothing for them.
Right.
And I think this might be a very valid approach for those of us. But I hate to see the community angry and studded with series of cottages. They're going to be many pioneer homes, no matter how you look at them, when you get them into a community like that.
Well, other than the fact that Asheville does once in Fairbanks, how do you see this program different from that one? That new big one that you have?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I really think that we're taking a very euphoric attitude towards this whole thing based on the per unit costs that the department's been talking about so far. I just cannot believe that they're more ballpark than anyway. And here we are all sitting here thinking happily of Anchorage and Fairbanks and all the other communities in Alaska studded with free housing. You're looking at $500 million instead of $53 million. What are you gonna do here? Now, I could be persuaded for a demonstration project in some remote areas of Alaska, but for any general thing like this, no way.
Well, I think it's been discussed here that we ought to narrow it down and a little more strictly define where we're talking about.
Mr. Chairman.
Just by limiting it to those places under 5,000 population, probably wouldn't define it narrowly enough.
Yeah, I agree, but this is, you know, my thinking is that you're going to exclude the figures.
Yeah, I think I could agree with Glenn there that he should put a population factor in here, probably, but 5,000, I don't think I'd go along with that. I'd rather go, say, about 10,000, because the city of Nome is over 5,000, so they would
only. I didn't include that.
One over five.
Mr. Chairman, may I ask Mr. Davis a question? When this type of a situation, a cottage home, we made the assumption that you're referring to pretty much of a self-contained unit rather than services of say a food services or something of that nature being provided in total. Is that correct?
Yeah, my concept was to put a unit up, you know, and have just based on room for six people or six elderly people. My concept there was to go ahead and provide rooms for all these six people, maybe double them up, you know, two in each room there, but have a room there where the local caretaker would be able to live, have living quarters for them there, and hopefully this would be the local village, you know, because they could be there to take care of them and wouldn't be out of their way at all. They just would provide whatever service is necessary, you know.
You know, there'd be a considerable difference in the whole costs arranged, everything else, if you're talking about a rooming house with six rooms, or if you're talking about six apartment type situations with total live-in capabilities, cooking facilities, etc., restrooms, so forth. What's your thinking on that? Would they be, or would they have to provide, would the total complex, whether it be a sixplex, an eightplex, whatever, would there have to be services provided for meal service and so forth?
Well, when you get that old, I'm sure that they would have, you would have to provide the service, because they're, you know, they're at the point to where they can't provide them for themselves anymore, you know? So they would need help to...
Especially if they're blind or disabled.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you're probably talking about, when you talk about a six-unit number, then you'd have a, perhaps a common facility, at least for cooking or meal service, and then have maybe six smaller units that would use those common facilities.
Pioneer
Home, that's what you're talking about.
They're going back to institution.
More or less, yeah, but without the cost factor.
Yeah,
certainly not.
Yeah. Again, you get that's something that again we didn't know for sure. Yeah. And I think that is going to vary the costs. It's going to escalate the costs over individualized self-contained units.
Well, as you're working up the fiscal note, perhaps you ought to be talking to Mr. Davis for some specific ideas. Gentleman back here, one that has comment.
Well, I represent the Department of Health and Social Services. We would like to testify to about some of the...
All right. I assume that if you fell here, basically...
But why don't we wait to get the fiscal position from the department and come back to the university and have them this right now? Because we don't have time now, anyway.
Okay, well, it's been suggested that we wait until Thursday to finish it up once we have the fiscal note. Would that be satisfactory?
Fine.
Yeah, would you like us then to, I presume, to proceed maybe narrowing it down to these three sites that were mentioned and try to get a little more definitive data, knowing what we know now?
Prior to that time.
I think we can do that a lot. Probably we can find anybody around to talk to. I think there's more people.
Is that a vacant?
There's quite a bit more today than there were yesterday.
Mr. Chairman, I'd suggest you put a sandwich board on your back and walk with them all day.
Chat.
Talk as you walk.
Well, we're going to have another hearing on this on Thursday then. And today we understood that the fiscal data wasn't necessarily completely available, so more discussion.
Okay. We tried to make that clear before we started. Okay.
Jack, he was going to...
He just came in and went. Who?
Jack, who?
Did you have some further testimony planned or prepared, Kevin?
Nothing beyond the one question that had been raised at that...
Nothing beyond what?
The one question you had raised about the cost of that notice requirement. The bill requires the...
Which one are you talking about?
Pardon me, 8657, the platting one. You raised the question, I think. That's the 657. You or someone on the committee raised the question what it would cost to fulfill that requirement, I guess, on page line 17, cost of publication and mailing.
That's existing language, though. That's already part of the...
Yes, it is. The costs, though, are some, you know, in the order of $20-$30. It's that kind of thing. It might even be satisfied by notice requirements, say, in a rural town, of mailing up a notice in the post office. It's that simple in terms of the legal notice requirements. It's not at all an expensive item. Pardon?
We'll just here for a minute until Jack gets back. I assume those folks have something else they'd like to know. 627? Yes. Pardon?
Can we start with Kevin? Is that
sure, yeah. We're ready to ask the question, sir.
Mr. Chairman, just as a side, and nothing to do with the merits of the bill, but it seems to me like we're having an awful lot of problem getting anybody to come down and tell us why we should have these built in the first place, or is it just that in my imagination?
Well, I think today is a special exception. We were having a little trouble call this morning. I know Mr. Roderick was here.
All right.
Would you care to come and join us at the table? And I assume you have some comments here.
Are we talking on the plating or?
Yes, sir, 60-70.
What I've got here is Dale Tubbs, who's the deputy director of the Division of Lands. He's testifying at the House Resources right now on our 654. And I can grab him and bring him over, I think is what our intention was. But they're really getting into a lot of technical stuff over there, and Dale's the only one that can answer it. Why don't I try to just bring him over here?
Okay, that worked out.
He's coming down specifically on that assessment bill, 656. But he can also come in on 657 if you want.
Right. I think the committee's having a little bit of trouble with 657. As Mr. Kramer pointed out, up until now, it didn't seem like there's been a real push or drive from the department. However, the more I think about it, the more I see and the more I hear people that are having problems with it, specifically some of the people from the Native Corporations. Just for instance, they feel somewhat threatened by the whole idea of the additional authority being given to the Division of Lands.
Yes, it's a very controversial matter. I'm sure nobody really wants to have to come under platting and particularly zoning that follows on. I think it's a policy decision by the legislature whether this is the time to do it. I think eventually you're going to have to do it, I would assume. You've got 40 million acres out into the countryside. If you're not going to control it in platting, I guess the question is how will it be controlled?
Mr. Chairman, another response to that would be, good man, Dave Burrow. That's our other choice.
Sure.
That's the only other one we've got left that I know of.
Well, my preference is if you can encourage local government out in the unorganized borough, please do it. That's the answer. Until you do, and we have this land to be controlled in some fashion, or control is probably not the proper word, but managed.
Along those lines, Mr. Chairman, I have had some discussions recently with people interested in municipal government, and while we've imposed REAAs on the rural areas, we're also in the discussion stages of imposing local health districts, which is, in a way, the state is putting those service areas out there, which is even questionable constitutionally in some ways, because service areas are allied to boroughs, and we're doing it, we're mandating those in a way, and the people out there wanted those education areas, but they are also, could be appropriate entities for third-class boroughs if the legislature ever decided they want to go that route, which is, another imposition. The state could impose third-class boroughs out there, or some kind of boroughs, as I understand it. The law allows the legislature to do that. Of course, we don't do that because it's an uncomfortable thing to do, because people not like the idea. At the same time, we're imposing services out there through another route.
Such as the REAs, I suppose those boundaries would be ideal as third-class
borough. Well, they're all we've got. But I don't know if you could comment on that, Jack or Kevin. But
of course, the third-class borough would fall into the same category as the unorganized borough as far as this bill is concerned.
That's right. Well, we could impose boroughs. Well, you certainly did before. We mandated boroughs, right?
The legislature did.
And it's a very hotly controversial thing, but it was done in the more urban and settled areas. And unless we do it, it appears like not many people out there are going to go for it, unless we keep imposing services on them and figure it out. No one knows what the reaction will be in the long run. So we're doing this instead, it appears to me. We're also doing this as a way of setting up these kind of services, which are not forthcoming because nobody out there is organizing the girls.
Right. Well, does everybody understand what the bill would do? You see that presently the Division of Lands only has the powers as under 133, 210 to 240, and this, of course, would expand it to include all the platting functions that a regular general law municipality has. I think, as Mr. Roderick's pointed out, it's a matter of policy.
Mr. Chairman, I really favor the idea. I don't see much point in waiting. It's not going to be any more popular this year or next year, but it seems to me it's something we might have to do, however distasteful it appears to some people.
Was the Division of Lands capable of assuming this power at this time?
You must think so.
Well, let's put it this way. Mr. Tubbs, when and if he gets over here, would testify to the fact that it will create a bureaucracy. I mean, you're going to start having plats required to come in from various places in the state that are not being required now. It's basically a technical service that you provide. You check the plats and see if they're properly surveyed, and it's not a policy kind of thing, particularly on the platting level. It could be in the Division of Lands, we've been discussing this, or in Community and Regional Affairs. I don't think anyone really wants to do it. But my personal opinion is it probably would be best done in the Division of Lands, where you have cartographers, you have people in that technical thing. The counter argument is Community and Regional Affairs has people going into the bush, going out from the principal cities more often than the Division of Lands. We don't have anybody going out on a regular basis.
Well, in addition to furthering Mr. Hirschberger's question, is the Division of Lands staffed up to do it? I know that I've had some personal dealings with the Division of Lands over the last year or so as far as I had one of those open entry sites, and in order to get it patented, I had to go down and get survey instructions, and then we went out and surveyed it, and it took about 6 months to get the survey instructions, and that was because they were understaffed, they had a lot of vacant positions, and they just weren't into doing it. I just wonder if the Division of Lands really is staffed up and would be able to, do something like this in an expeditious manner.
No, I think the fiscal note shows that there is a need for more people to be put in the Division of Lands to accomplish this.
Well, how does one more person looks like, or not too many, well, for $41,000, I suppose, but how many people is that?
It's one.
Oh, they got two people they show.
Mr. Chairman, you can't buy two people for $41,000. All you can buy for that is a legislator.
Two this year and then three next year. Clerk typist and cadastral surveyor, and then later on civil engineering assistant 3.
Mr. Chairman, could I ask a question? What I'd like to have some kind of a technical explanation, if I can, what the platting authority as compared to planning authority, and just what do you do with platting authority? What can be done? What can't be done?
Sure. The platting authority basically involves the review of subdivision plats. That is, some landowner, private owner, has a large parcel of land, and for residential or other commercial development, wants to subdivide it into parcels and then sell the parcels individually. A couple of questions come up at that point. State law requires it to be recorded. All subdivision plats to be recorded. It also requires, in the case of cities and boroughs, that all subdivision plats be reviewed by the local planning commission, whether it's city or borough, for compliance with a couple of technical standards. The kind of things that you're concerned about is accurate monumentation and accurate description of the parcel, so that when you record them, you have a guarantee that you have actually described on the deed and paperwork that follows a parcel of land. If there's a tax question involved because it's within a jurisdiction, you know legally what parcels you're talking about. These requirements for survey and monumentation give a lot of protection to any subsequent purchaser, and as far as the pedigree of the title goes and tax purposes and tax administration. But as important as that, I guess, this is the chance at which the public has a right to check the way the land is laid out, especially, you say, if it's a major subdivision, to make sure that provision is made for future utilities, streets, things of that sort.
I'll boil it down a little more. What I want to know is that the part that you would play in platting, is this of a technical nature? You approve that it's what this these people are trying to do is technically correct, or is the planning authority in a position to tell them, no, you can't do it? And I'll be even a little more explicit.
It might well be.
If you're trying to make an end run around the coastal zone management, or, you know, in the unorganized borough, something like that, I'm not going to buy it. But, you know, if this is a technical thing, in other words, if Mr. Hirschberger has some property or something out in the unorganized borough, and he wants to subdivide it or whatever they do that, you know, is connected with plats, and he goes out and does this, and you come in, and he comes in and you say to them, well, you know, technically and lawfully, this is not correct, so you'll have to redo that. Now, if that's what what the authority would have in planning, I don't object to that. But if you, if there's any authority there that tells Mr. Hirschberger, no, you can't do that, then, you know, I split the sheet right there. That's
There would be some qualitative standards involved, in the ordinary exercise of plating function. One of them would have to do with the quality of the monumentation and surveying to make sure that, you know, technically it is accurate and that survey standards have been met, so that, as I say, future property owners and say if there are public rights of way involved, they'll be accurately described and platted. Another part might come up in issues of this sort if there's a road dedication and it's on property with a fairly steep grade. You would look at it from a civil engineering point of view to see that the proposed road is in fact a buildable road, or is of adequate size, that the land reserved for it is of adequate width, and questions like that. You might also want to look at the internal layout of a large subdivision and ask yourself questions about, well, the way the developer has laid it out, does it provide for an economical road system? That is, you can design it so that you have twice as much or much less road, which means that when the public is requested to build streets, you build maybe 1,000 feet of roads, or you build 500 feet of roads and maintain and clear snow on 1,000 or 500 feet of roads. These are primarily the civil engineering type questions and standards that you would bring to bear. You might have a case like this too. If it were a swamp parcel, you might raise questions, much as say the Department of Environmental Conservation raises questions, whether or not it's feasible for this to be a separate subdivided lot, because there are problems of water supply and waste disposal that are a matter of public health concern, and the standards might say if it's a kind of parcel that isn't feasible for development, it oughtn't be subdivided. So the standards are primarily technical. They do have some implications, but I don't think it's not a bill that really a function that really controls land use in the way zoning does, and it's not a potent planning tool in the sense that plans or land use plans usually are. It's much more oriented towards civil engineering type considerations.
But then the department, if I may, then you do reach a point where the department would actually, it would be a matter of judgment, not a technical thing, but a matter of judgment on their part as compared to the subdivider or whoever's, the developers.
The way it usually is run is there are standards set out, whether in regulation or, local ordinances. In this case, the department would prepare regulations. As the law is written, in any case where the department might reject, either permanently or temporarily, somebody's proposed plat, they have to give written reason why. The law would also require an appeals process to be set up, either to some board that the department might establish, or through judicial recourse.
Thank you.
Well, then, are those mechanisms presently in existence, or would this have to be done as a result of this bill
for
appeals?
I think there are standards now, regulations for the vacation of rights of ways, which is the authority they presently have. You recall that the bill refers to a section of Title 29 as the basic approach that should be followed. That is where it's laid out exactly how a municipal government exercises its platting function, and in parallel terms how the Division of Lands ought to exercise it. Pretty much the same approach.
In that respect, then, they don't presently do this with that kind of authority. They just are advice and recommendation powers right now, but they don't have, this would be final rejection or approvals on these outlying areas, which
yes.
we don't presently exercise right. anywhere. So.
Part of it is as much a service function as a, you know, as a regulatory one. That is, it can be something that is helpful if you know, administered in the right spirit to anyone proposing to subdivide land. And its connection with recording is important, as parcels are subdivided in rural areas. Unless there is some standards for the subdivision of land, monumentation, and recording of title and land trades, it's going to be very hard in a very brief period of a few decades to have any idea who owns what out there.
Is there a problem now?
There's a problem now with that already, really, because of the history of the way recording's been handled in the state. That is, I think we had a period where there were like 20-odd different recording offices, and someone in Ketchikan could record in Barrow. Someone in Barrow could record in Dillingham, and on and on. And so there's really a very difficult situation now, and even determining, you know, tracking land ownership records.
Of course, we're slam up against the fact that the land we're talking about is all private land, all Native Corporation land.
That, or you know, even in other areas, say along, say the Richardson Highway and the Pipeline Corridor, there might be other private lands. But basically, you're talking about private lands and, under this bill.
You know, Mr. Freeman's question about what real powers they could assume, and Title 29, the first section that is now covered to 2933.150 talks about jurisdiction. It includes but is not limited to the control of, and they go through form, size, other aspects, subdivisions, dimensions, street widths, and so forth. I'm not sure what it means when it says it's not limited to, but or includes but is not limited to. I'm wondering how broad that could be interpreted. I wonder what other real jurisdiction that a planning authority such as a division of landscape might have. It's you know, I think you get the gist of the question. I think as far as the authority to provide technical guidance and the other benefits that it could be derived from, as you described, I mean, it sounds all right to me.
Honestly, Mr. Chairman, it's a little bit hard. You know, it's kind of a fishing question, and that's hard to answer until regulations have been drafted and, you know, the thought given to it. You know, and that's a step that the legislature, you know, has opportunity to review and raise issue if the legislature feels the department is moving off on the wrong track. It's a little bit hard to, you know, at this stage give all the details, but on the other hand, you know, there is a check in the review of any regulations the department would prepare.
Mr. Chairman, I think what the question really is can the platting function be used as a zoning tool? And this has traditionally always been fuzzy when you get right up against each other. You know, can the platting board or platting authority refuse to grant a person a plat because he didn't put his roads in the right place or because he didn't, it's the grade is too steep? I think the technical answer is no. Or legal answer is he cannot. A platting authority should concern itself with the technical aspects of things. It edges into zoning in that sometimes the platting board locally, for instance, will say, no, we're not going to issue that plat. The grade is 45%. There's no way you can get up it, like up in your country, Eagle River.
Right. Well, I remember that case very specifically.
Sure.
I mean, I think it would have been the desire of the municipality to zone that area, not allowed with certain sized lots, but since it wasn't a zoning restriction, once their plat was laid out, it was approved. But, you know, and I think the planning authority was properly used in that case, as far as it didn't overextend its jurisdiction into a case where there, you know, some expressed fear in this case.
And that's, you know, to generalize on this is very difficult because, in fact, the planning authority has been used in some cases where there isn't zoning. The proper zoning authority there to accomplish these things, but legally, no. Platting is to approve the plat, put it on record. Incidentally, if you don't have this eventually in the bush, in quotes, money isn't going going to go into the bush in the way that the natives want it to go in, because the financial institutions won't loan money unless they have proper recording, meaning proper surveys, proper plats. So there's no way to dodge this one, in my estimation, over the long haul. Either you do it through creation of local governments or some planning authorities.
But there's nothing that prohibits the platting now, as far as out there is concerned, is there?
No, not if you have a local government. No.
What do you mean if you have a local government? You mean there's absolutely no way to get a plat outside of, have a plat approved or have a plat outside an organized government? That's not so.
There's no authority set up to it.
Well, that's probably, go ahead, Kevin.
Yeah. The law does require all, plats to be recorded. I think that is more honored in the breach. And the ones, you know, the ones who don't honor it initially, I suppose, are happy to live with it. But down the line, it, you know, it really does create problems, especially when there aren't standards for it. Because the point that Mr. Roderick brought up, the question of marketability of title, you know, will over time, I think, get to be a severe problem. You can see it in places like Nome, where they've lost their land records, or even here in Juneau, where it's very hard in some cases to get bank loans. If there's fuzziness in the legal descriptions and in the pedigree of the title, finance problems, you know, eventually arise if development ever does occur.
Well, it sounds like the administration is saying that this is the best we can do in the absence of actual planning authorities out there. Is that this is the one route we have to go because there are no boroughs, no planning authorities. This is the next best thing to fill in that gap.
It's a start.
It sounds like that's what they're saying, trying to say here. As an idea, I guess I should be addressing that to Jim.
Yes, I think that's probably... I mean, that's proper. I didn't draft this bill, but I think that's behind it.
How would this specifically affect, or how do we now handle, for instance, Prudhoe Bay? You know, I have 400 points of Hudson Roads and so on and so forth. Does this come under the purview of the planning, platting, and so on and so forth? As a subdivision, does it not have?
In both cases, whether it's the planning itself, that is land use planning, or platting, it'd be a borough function in Prudhoe Bay, that is, you're in the North Slope borough, and so the borough supersedes the state as far as, you know, land use planning, even on state lands that are leased, and also has the right to exercise the platting function.
This would be a function of the North Slope borough,
right?
As regards
right.
That set.
Mr. Chairman,
yes. Is this going to hold up these areas from being organized? Now we're giving them zoning, planning Wednesday. Planning, we're giving them education, we're giving them health service. There's going to be no reason for these areas to organize in it.
That was, we discussed that last time. It's the chicken and the egg thing. If you impose this on the areas, will it disincline them to form local governments, or do you teach them that it's necessary and edge them into an organization? I don't know.
There's another aspect of this that we talked about, I guess, at the previous hearing, too. An important dimension of the bill is a financial one, a public finance one. It's the public, you know, the local public and the state that basically provides the funds for providing the public services. I think at the time land is subdivided, good thinking, you know, in anticipation of providing utilities and services and roads can help cut down the cost of providing these facilities some time later on. And I think that's probably the biggest potential benefit of the bill. And this is something that I think the legislature, does have to consider. That is, through planning at the time the land is subdivided, planning in the sense of reserving utility corridors, rights of way, things that would affect public costs, you can reduce the costs of installing those utilities at some future date, and since the state really, through revenue sharing and other grant programs, provides a good part of the funds for local provision of services and public improvements, the trade-off is that the state over the long run gets to save a lot of money because it had these planning considerations in mind when the land was subdivided.
Many of these areas where you look at the map, but some of the utilities and roads, there's going to be the least of their their worries, but the main ones is health, education, and that. And we started giving them that already, and along with it.
There's an awful lot of money being put into to roads, local service roads and trails, to utilities and power systems in rural Alaska, road maintenance, literally millions of state and federal funds every year. And, you know, plus the maintenance obligations, you know, indefinitely thereafter.
Well, they're getting that when they're unorganized. And what's their need for them to organize? And we're adding more onto it here now.
Well, I think what he's saying to that point is that this sort of provision was on the books, so that the money be saved because the planning would have been approved, and the planning essentially would have been done to probably cut down some of the cost of providing these new utility corridors or whatever services the state does eventually have to come in and provide. Well, it would be cheaper if it was easier to do.
Well, my personal opinion, Al, is that the tendency is going to be to have more and more local government out of the bush. I mean, they own the land, they want local control. I think they should only organize when they want to organize. I don't think the state should ever come in and say, hey, you know, you've got to have local government, because it won't work. But if these records are begin to be kept on the land, and then they organize a local government, they'll be transferred to the local government. And my personal opinion is that this ought to be started soon, and that local governments will follow on, and much of it will be done, or the beginnings of it will be done for them. It may be a year from now that most of the bush areas will start to organize into viable boroughs or large cities or whatever. I don't know, but it's tied to the land. They're going to own the land. They're going to have to manage the land. And how they're going to do it, whether they're going to try to do it in their regional corporations for a length of time, I think ultimately they're going to have to get over into some public governments.
Well, you know, basically we're doing that now. Go back again, like with the schools, that they're getting their own school boards out there. Like the, and health, doing the same thing. They're getting the other. This thing, I'm able to keep them going here until there's going to be no need at all for them to organize.
For the local government, so.
We're about out of time. I just have one more question. You must not envision too many of these, too many subdivisions or too much of a workload if you only assume that there's going to be a need for two people this year. I assume that anyway.
That's right. It would be a slow-starting program. Incidentally, Mr. Tubbs has just arrived. On that local assessment, the special assessment of municipalities, last time I couldn't handle all your questions. He's the expert. Unfortunately, we're running out of time.
We're out of time. We're going to have to turn it off. We'll have to talk to you.
All right.